Welcome back to Speaking of Happy. I am Eli Rigatuso, and you are listening to Radio Omaha, Omaha's only online radio station, commercial-free, all about music, and we have a little bit of talk. And that's what we're going to be doing right now. We're going to be talking. And on Speaking of Happy, we talk about things that make us happy. And one of the things that makes me happy is Brody Ray Runge.
Hey. What's going on?
Welcome to the show, Brody.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you accepted my invitation. Brody is a musician.
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. And Brody has got an amazing story because Brody is a musician, a trans man. Mm-hmm. What else?
You know, I really like to speak. Sometimes I like to speak out and speak on campuses, conferences about my issues, my transgender issues, and play a little music. I support direct support personnel for special needs individuals as well.
Oh, very cool.
So, yeah, it's pretty rewarding.
That is. Yeah. That absolutely has to be very rewarding. I know my partner did that kind of work for a long time.
Okay, yeah.
And so it's really, you know, it's a special kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a special kind of job. You know, you have to have a certain kind of touch and with these people, you know?
Absolutely.
You really have to know how to work with them. It's
and
cool.
Yeah, and also be able to treat them like human beings.
Yeah.
Which,
you know,
I know a lot of times people don't. But yeah. So, Brody, tell me something. How in the hello did you get involved in music?
You know, it started way back when. And my mom always told me I was singing harmonies in my car seat and I'd be kicking and screaming and singing along to anything on the radio. And when I was about 8 years old, she got me my first guitar. She's like, "Do you want to play an instrument?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, I thought you would never ask." You know, and my whole life just lit up. And she took me into a music store downtown Kearney. And I just had never seen anything like that. I was like looking around and we found a guitar and she's like, "Do you want to play the guitar?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I do." Got my first guitar and got my first lesson set up, and that just changed my whole life. My whole world just flipped upside down, and I found something that I could express myself through. And music helped me relate and helped me express myself to people and, you know, kind of get through some really hard times in my life. You know, going through life as a young person and being transgendered is really hard when you know from a very young age. And it's very confusing. So having that outlet just kind of brought everything full circle for me.
So how old would you say you were when you realized that you were trans?
Everyone's like, you won't really know when you're that young. And I think that you do know. Because when you're little and you're about 3-4 years old, you play with boy toys or you play with girl toys or you wear dresses or you wear jeans or, you know, you cut your hair or you grow it long. And ever since I could remember, when I was like 3-4 years old, my mom said I wanted boy everything. And she knew then. She's like, I knew when you're in the car seat kicking and screaming until you got the boy toy and your Happy Meal every mm-hmm. time in McDonald's. And I came out to them when I was 8 years old.
Wow. Yeah. How was that for your mom initially when she knew, even before you could put it into words? What was that experience like for your mom?
I think it was more relieving for her because we all kind of knew what was going on. And she said she always knew that I was different and that there was just something else going on. And she knew it wasn't a phase. And she actually came to me when I was about 8-9 years old and asked me if I felt like I should be a boy. She thought that maybe it was a phase and that I would grow out of it. And around 14 years old, she knew that it was serious and it wasn't a phase and that I wasn't like a lesbian or just gay, that I was going to need to go through some changes. And that's what I wanted to do. And she supported me. She said she was really sad to lose her daughter, but she also gained a son. But she never lost who I was.
So you never had to experience that feeling of losing your family?
I had to give them some ultimatums. It was either I was going to move off and do this on my own because mm-hmm. I was tired of waiting, or we could do it together as a family and I could stay and we could be a family and they could support me.
How old were you when that happened?
I think I was 21 years old and I was in college and I was going through a really bad breakup and I was tired of being dumped by girls because I wasn't man enough and I wanted to be man enough.
Wow.
You know, I wanted to feel like I was any other guy because I was on the inside and I wanted people to know me that way on the outside.
Right.
And so I dropped out of college and I had like a semester left to go and I said, you know, I'm just going to do this. And so my mom's like, okay, let's do it then. Let's go. And we came down here to Omaha to have my top surgery when I was about 22, I think.
Wow. So what was it like then when you were eight and you said, yeah, I'm a boy, from eight until 22? What did you do and how did you cope with being who you were and not feeling as though you were in the right body? Did you start hormones? Did you start blockers? Like what?
There was very little resources at that time. And I was really out there trying to find my own ways to figure this out on my own because my mom didn't know anything. My dad refused to help because he thought that he just wanted me to fit in. He wanted me to just dress like a girl and do girl things and nobody will make fun of you. And he wanted to protect me, but that was damaging for me as well. They both came around, but it was really hard because I was trying to do it myself and find resources myself. And, you know, getting out there, like looking up, okay, testosterone supplements that you can buy online or like hormone blockers, you know, like that you don't want to buy that stuff off of online, you know, that's just not safe. And,
right.
You know, I tried other things out. It was scary. And I told my mom about it, you know, and after I went through puberty, it was really devastating for me having a chest like with breasts and, you know, going through the menstrual cycles. And it's just like this dysphoria just hit me hard. And here I am, a man trapped inside of a female body that's growing even more into a female image. And mm-hmm. I was trapped inside of a burning building. I knew I hit a wall. I hit a wall and I was going to do it with or without their help.
I wonder sometimes for myself because I knew that I was different when I was very young, right around that same time. And I used to fight with my mom and tell her I wanted boy things and I wanted what my brother had and all of those things. But we're talking back in the mid to late 60s, early 70s.
Oh, yeah.
There was not, although I did find out later it was the early 60s, the very first woman who officially had, it was not at the time, it was just called a sex reassignment.
Reassignment.
So the first one to ever have surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And, but my parents would have never known that. That's not something they would have paid attention to on the news or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was just, you know, I remember now when I started to experience puberty that it had a horrible effect on me.
Yeah.
I walked home from school the first time I got my period. I was sicker than a dog for like 3 days. I argued with my mom that I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to live mm-hmm. if I was going to have to live like this. But I went. Like I somehow in my mind, I guess I made it okay. And I never talked about being attracted to girls. Like mm-hmm. I didn't get that far.
Okay.
Not until I was much older.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to go. I was never dating boys. I didn't care about boys. I didn't want to kiss boys. I had crushes on all the little neighbor girls.
All the girls.
You know, but I never had anyone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
There was never anyone to share that stuff with. And I held that inside until I moved out and started college.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to kind of feel myself, you know, blossom a little bit and figure out who I was. So you know, there's a part of me that's kind of envious of your journey, but there, we're also talking that yours started probably, what, 10, 15 years later than mine did.
Yeah, yeah. And I think about that every day and I talk about that every day. It's like we look back on even before that when there was none of this, there was nothing. I couldn't imagine wanting to live that way. And they had to live their whole lives that way until they died. We are just very fortunate mm-hmm. to be in a generation where we can have that choice now.
Absolutely.
And I am very fortunate and very lucky to have support from my parents to pay $60,000 for me to go overseas to have a surgery. That's unheard of. Not a lot of people get that. And that's where I feel it's the most important thing for me right now is to be very successful with my music so I can give back to other people. I want to help people with their surgeries. And I've promised so many people, you know, like when I break in and to mainstream and, you know, we get that money rolling, me and my mom have started a nonprofit fund at a bank where we will put money into that and pay for people's surgeries.
Wow.
And we want to do that because not everyone has supportive parents and parents who have those resources. And it's very hard. And so it's very important for me to speak out and give those resources to parents and their children. And
absolutely. And that is a wonderful, you know, it's a great way to give back to the community. And I just know that there are so many people out there who aren't as fortunate as us. Like I can afford to get top surgery myself, but I know there are a lot of people who couldn't and who insurance is still not covering. And it's unfortunate, but I think it's wonderful that your mother and you are both starting that. And you'll have to let me know so we can talk a little bit more about that.
Yes.
And hopefully people will be willing to donate, especially if it's a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Great way to help people who can't afford surgery and who absolutely need it to survive. We will be right back after this with another segment of Speaking of Happy and with Brody Ray Runge. I am Eli Rigatuso. We'll be right back.
All right, this is You Got Me on My Knees. Expected it or needed it most. The one I quit looking for found me. Baby, you saved me from me when I hit my low. I didn't know where to go. You picked me up. You put me back on my feet. That first kiss that landed on my lips, the songs and lights and night was just right. Your head leans on mine as I close my eyes. I can't breathe. You got me on my knees. Girl, where have you been? I've been looking for you. And I'm sorry I stare, but the way I shine is just cruel. And I'm not sure where this is all gonna go, but I know there is no cure. And now I know for sure, for sure.
Welcome back to Speaking of Happy. I am Eli Rigatuso, and we are still here with Brody Ray Runge. Is it Brody Ray or Brody Ray Runge?
You know, whatever you want, whatever feels good. Brody Ray is like easy and flows.
Yeah.
Just go with it.
It does.
Yeah.
I think Brody Ray Runge's flows.
I mean, it flows too, you know?
It does. It's
I got pages on Facebook for both, so.
Well, that's smart to have that kind of real estate out there. You just never know.
Yeah. I kind of use the Brody Ray as a stage name for like my music, you know?
Right.
And I use the Runge, you know, for my personal issues and personal life. And
they're not issues. It's just life.
Just life. Personal. Just life. Just personal things.
Well, okay. So I had a thought while we were on the break. How you said that your dad initially was just like, can't you just put the dress on, just dress like a girl, just be a girl already? And because he was worried that you were going to get hurt.
Yes.
What was his epiphany finally? Where was it where he finally realized, no, I got to get on this train because it's leaving the station and I need to be here.
I need to be on that. Gosh, I think I was probably in middle school And he was really pushing me. He's like, just go to buy the clothes in the girls section, you know, for your pictures, your yearbook pictures, you know, just look pretty and nice and do your hair and wear this. And you know, and those pictures, I look back on them. I'm like, oh my God, I was so miserable and trapped. And I told him that, you know, I feel like I should be you, not mom. You know, I feel like I should be a man. And it was really hard for him to wrap his mind around that because all he could see was his daughter.
Yeah.
He didn't see what I was feeling on the inside. Most men are just, they're a visual, you know? And my mom was so much more and deeper than that and emotional. And I took my dad probably a good few years after my mom got on board to really come around. And, you know, I told him, you know, I want you in my life and I want you to understand this. How can I help you? And so I printed off some articles for him and let him read things. And I had to get a little deeper and a little more painful for him to realize that this is something destructive for me.
So speaking of painful, tell me a little bit about what it was like in that interim time where you were binding and doing things to hide your blossoming female gender.
Going through puberty was like a total nightmare. It was like, I mean, just living as a female was like a dream in itself. I look back on Natalie days and I'm like, wow, what a dream. That wasn't real life for me, like you said. And I would dress like a male. I would act like a male. I would play football. I started playing football in middle school. I was on the football team just so I could prove to people. I was having to prove myself to people that I was man enough. I could do this. I could date the girls, kick that ball just as far as they did. I was trying to prove it to everybody, but then I realized I just need to do it for me, you know? And oh gosh, I used to have to,
you said something about binding and your mom didn't realize.
Yeah. And you know, like going through puberty, having breasts when you feel like you should have a flat chest, I would do anything. I had these binders. What are those wraps? Those ACE bandage wraps. And I would take those and I'd wrap them as tightly as I could. It took me like 20 minutes every day. And I would wrap them as tightly as I could around my chest like 7 times. And then I would take those little clips to hold them together.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get those on there. And sometimes they would get my skin and like hook my skin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd start bleeding. And then I'd use safety pins and anything that would just keep it together.
Right.
And that didn't really show. And I'd wear layers so no one could see the ridges on my chest. And I could hardly breathe. Like I could hardly breathe. And I had to wear it all day through PE, through this, through that, through football, and I couldn't breathe. I was sweating. I was breaking out. I was getting scarring underneath of my arms. And my mom's like, you know, how are you keep your chest so flat? She's like, I know you're going through puberty. I know you have breasts. And I just, you know, I'm like, do you want me to show you? And I told her and I was okay with that. And I was like, maybe she needs to see this. And that's when I think it was really big for her. It was a big moment for her. You know, she saw those scars. She saw what it was doing to my chest and my body. And she just broke down in tears. And she was willing then to help me find a solution. And my dad, I showed my dad, and he's not a very emotional guy, but he wants the best for his kids. And he was willing to get on board, you know, and help me.
Yeah. It's horrible that it has to get to that point.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I still think I'm going to have to talk to your mom at some point because I'd love to hear, you know, how she was able to be more accepting quicker and just understand because she could tell even before you could vocalize it.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, she's really hard on herself. If we get her in here, she's going to kind of throw herself under the bus and say, you know, I should have done this. I should have done that. And I knew, and I should have had more resources. And I'm like, mom, you know, don't be so hard on yourself. I didn't know either. We learned the word transgendered when I was 14 in a magazine, and she slid it over to me and she's like, is this how you feel? And I just broke down in tears. I'm like, oh my gosh, I want that. I want to be that guy. Like I can do this and I want to do that. And she's like, okay.
Do you have siblings? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes. I have an older sister and a younger sister.
How are your sisters about all of it?
My older sister, she's a lot like me, and we have a lot in common. She's been on board ever since. And my younger sister, she's going into the medical field at UNO. So it took some time. They were young when I came out, and we were all young, and it was very new. And from what we knew, I was the only person in Nebraska, you know, like that was doing this and was open about it. But when we dig deeper, there was hundreds of people. After all these years, you know, they write their papers about me, and they put the articles in the school newspapers. While Justine was in high school, she wrote a whole article for the paper about me, and she would do her psychological papers over my issue, my transgendered psychological problems, you know. And she's just like, you know, this is so interesting and so cool. And so that really got her inspired to get into that medical field, you know, and learn more about what's going on with the brain and the chemistry and the science behind what happens to transgendered and gay people.
Absolutely, because there is so much more going on there, I think, than just this gender binary we've all been kind of drugged to believe.
Yeah.
And I say drugged on purpose, because everybody has this idea that it's just we're either male or female and that's it. Yeah. There's nothing in between.
Yeah.
And I think that just fosters the hate and the transphobia and all the BS that goes along with it, because we really honestly, you know, I had a friend of mine say, you know, are you going to have any surgeries? Because if you aren't, are you going to just live as a man in a woman's body? And I thought about that, because initially my fear was, are people going to give me a hard time if I have a full mustache and beard and I'm sporting double D's?
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, who cares?
Yeah.
Who really cared if they did? I mean, I want them gone.
Yeah.
But ultimately, who would or should care?
Mm-hmm.
We have to get ourselves understanding more from a perspective of, it doesn't matter if they're pre or post op. If someone says to you, I am female, but they are presenting male, just let them share that.
Yeah.
And share it and understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it doesn't have to look the way we think it does.
Yeah. And that's a really good point to make, because I've been reading a lot about gender and sex and how they're two completely different things. And some people feel that their sex is one way and that their gender is another way. Gender is in your head and your sex is your body. And sometimes people, they match up differently for everybody.
Well, absolutely.
And
I mean, it's even trans people who identify as who want to transition. I know people who have been born assigned female, transition to male, and date men.
Yeah.
And who cares?
And that's life, you know. That's just who they are. There's nothing, nobody chose that for them. Who would choose that, you know?
Absolutely. And, why would anybody choose that? I mean, that's the other piece of it. Like, I love it when people are all up in arms because the transgender females want to use the women's restroom. And these women are like, I don't want to go to the bathroom with a man. It's like, well, you're not. You're going to the bathroom with a woman.
Yeah. You just.
And if you're peeking through the little stall door there to see whether or not it's really a man or a woman or whatever you think it is, you're the one with the problem.
Yeah.
Because most trans people are just needing to go to the bathroom. It doesn't have anything to do with anything else happening.
We all got to go.
Yeah. You know, I'm like right now, I mean, everybody pees. Isn't there a book, Everybody Poops?
Everybody pees, everybody poops. I think there is. Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah.
I love it. All right. Well, we've got another 10 minutes is come and gone. We're going to go into another music section here. We're going to play a couple songs for you, and we'll be right back with Brody after this.
This one's called Can't Love You. I can't hurt anymore. I can't hurt any less. We're both stuck, moving on, I guess. Been holding on. She's been pulling away. Where will she go if I stay? Love, love, love. What do we do? 'Cause I can't live well without you. You got bed, both hands on my door. I don't love you anymore. Am I Mr. Right or Mr. Right now? Love, love, love. What do we do? 'Cause I can't live with or without you. You got talking myself in and out of it. Maybe we could work it out, or maybe we're just tired of faking it. You're in, you're out, you do nothing but bring me down. Avoiding all these complications and taking the long way around. Love, love, love. What do we do? 'Cause I can't live with or without you.
Welcome back to Speaking of Happy. We're still here in the studio with Brody Ray. And now, you know what? We're gonna table the transition conversation for a moment.
Switch it up a little bit.
We're gonna pinch hit.
Yeah. I like that.
We're gonna do some music. So we're gonna talk some music. So Brody, you said that you got your first guitar when you were 8.
Yes.
And it just lit up your life. Like you knew that this was it. When did you start writing music?
Oh gosh, as soon as I got the hang of the guitar, I was like, you know, this is kind of boring. I want to do something else. Like, and I started singing, you know, I was like, you know, I'm just going to sing along while I'm playing this thing. And then I was like, okay, I'm not that bad at singing. And so I started writing songs like really, really early. Like I was 10 years old and I was just writing like songs about sunshine and weird, cheesy stuff. My mom was just loving it. She's like, oh, I love that one so much. And I'm like, mom,
honey, sing the sunshine song.
Oh,
for
yeah,
me.
Yeah. And I'm like, mom, no, I don't remember that one. And oh gosh, I was so weird when I was writing songs when I was little, but I was no Taylor Swift, that's for sure. But I started writing like real seriously when I started getting into college and really dating and getting very serious in serious relationships. And I didn't have any other way to express myself but to write these songs and get it off my chest.
Yeah.
And so the first song I really wrote that kind of really meant something to me and was actually a decent song, I think it was "You're Only One." And it was to a girlfriend of mine. And I was trying to prove to her that she didn't need any other guys in her life. And I could be her only one. I could be the only guy. And I recorded that, you know, before I started my testosterone. And so I have recordings of it, like pre and post hormones. But it's really interesting to listen to that. And then I kept writing songs. My next one was "Light Your Fire." And it was kind of, you know, trying to rekindle that flame after it's been lost. And then I went down to Nashville in 2013 and started writing and recording this EP with a producer of mine, a friend of mine, Ben Flanders. He's from Australia, and he's the coolest rock guy on the planet Earth. He shreds on the guitar better than anybody I've ever seen. We wrote 5 songs in 5 days. Actually, we wrote 3 songs and recorded 5 songs. One of the other songs was actually written by someone else, and then we recorded it. And then the 2 songs, "Light Your Fire," was already written, or that one, yeah.
Awesome.
Because we didn't have "Your Only One" on there. But the other ones were, we just came up with those in the studio.
Yeah, that's awesome. So it's actually on the EP is called Detour. Mm-hmm. And where can they, if somebody wants to pick up a copy, where can they get it?
Yeah, the Detour EP, hard copies are on BrodyRay.com on the merch, the store. So you can buy it through that website. We have t-shirts, koozies, picks, posters, anything you can think of. The EP is $5. It's on iTunes. You can Google Brody Ray and it'll pop up. It's all over YouTube. You can listen to it for free on YouTube. They're all on there.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Well, hey, I mean, $5 yeah. for five songs. That's a dollar a song.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's cheaper than what they're selling them at, like $1.29 now, I think, for other ones.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. So make sure you pick up a copy of Detour, or how did you say that? You said it a little different than
Detour.
Me.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's yeah.
Detour. Taking no detours.
Yes.
We're going to go right to the point.
Let's play that one. Yeah. Detour, actually, the title of the album is Detour, but the first song on the CD is called Detour. And I wrote that song kind of, I had a friend who was dying from brain cancer, and she passed away right as the EP dropped. And I got to play it for her once, but I never got a response. Because she was already, you know, she was pretty much gone. But she did get to hear it, which is awesome. And she was like, I just want you to help me write a song about how my life's taking a different route or a detour. Mm. And I'm like, awesome. Okay, cool. I can do that. And then I took bits and pieces of my life and my detour. And we came up with this awesome song about just empowerment and getting through life's struggles and hurdles. And
wow.
And becoming bigger and stronger and better. And just keep going and pushing through those moments, you know?
Ooh, that's exciting. So, I can't wait to listen to it.
It's really powerful. It's really rocking. It's really cool. So
fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. So go out and pick up a copy of the EP online today.
Please do.
And so tell me a little bit about this. I know I have followed you since I had you come out and perform at Pride one year. And this was probably 4 years ago, I think,
Three or four, yeah.
And you have had a couple of interesting little twists and turns. You've tried out for The Voice a couple times.
Mm-hmm,
tell me a little bit about that experience.
Oh gosh, that was so cool. I've done The Voice and American Idol over the last few years, and going through a vocal transition as well has been really trying. And you really have to stay on top of it. To anyone who is like starting hormones and you want to be a singer, just keep singing through it. I lost my voice for like a year. I could hardly even talk my first year on T, and it was really hard to face the fact that I could maybe never sing again. But I just told myself, just keep doing it. It's what you love. It's what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You got to do it. And I pushed through, and vocally I'm where I've always wanted to be. And I finally have built my voice back up. And it's getting stronger and stronger, and I just keep singing every day. Going through that vocal transition through these auditions was really hard because I wasn't always strong, and I'm getting stronger every day. So I went through American Idol, and I sang for the celebrities twice.
Fine.
And I just sang for them a couple months ago. But I couldn't, nerves and anxiety just kind of take over sometimes. And especially like as a trans individual, you think that everybody's looking at you wrong and taking you the wrong way and
did
not
they
taking
know
you seriously.
When you went in the first time, did they know that you were trans?
They've probably had some scripts in front of them. They asked me a lot of questions, like they knew. And then I came out with it and they're like, oh, that's really cool, you know? And, you know, I told them that my voice was in transition, and I got one yes from like Randy Jackson, and the other, it was like Steven Tyler and J-Lo, and they're like, you know, come back. And so I waited, and I came back and I was stronger and I was a lot better, but I waited like 9 hours in a holding room for the celebrities to show up. And I had like 1 hour, 2 hours of sleep the night before. And it was in like in Oklahoma City. And I was like, I'm just done. I just checked out, and it didn't go very good. I did what I could. And The Voice, I made it to the blind auditions for season 7 with Danica Shirey and Craig Wayne Boyd, which was the winner of season 7. And I got to meet all those guys out in LA for about a week. It was super cool. I got through like a bunch of audition rounds, and I got to meet the head vocal coach for the show. And I didn't get to meet the celebrities though, because I met to the blinds. I couldn't get to LA in time for the actual live audition. So I'm going to go back for season 10 and try to get back.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Sweet. So there still could be some voice on your
horizon. Yeah, I'm going to keep trying for The Voice, because I really like what they got going on. And they don't make fun of people. Like American Idol, they kind of like, they take it the wrong way. And it's just kind of degrading. And I love The Voice because they're all about empowerment and not judging people off of what they look like.
Absolutely.
And what they sound like only.
I love the guy that's on there right now. Is it Jordan Smith?
Jordan Smith,
it,
I think.
Is it the guy with a very high voice?
Yes.
And he's a bigger guy, but he's, oh.
He's
amazing.
My favorite.
I
think he's going to win. I think he's going
to
win
too.
It.
He's freaking phenomenal.
I'll put money down on that.
Okay,
one.
So there's one other thing I want to talk about really quick.
Okay.
So you have been on a television show. It was mm-hmm. on TLC?
Yes.
How did you get picked for that?
You know, my mom actually was like, hey, one of my friends said TLC is like casting. They're looking for some people for this show called Strange Sex. And I'm like, whoa, mom, that's kind of weird. Like, I don't want to talk about this with you. And I don't need you to know anything about my sex life. And she's like, no, you're transition. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so I emailed them that night and I was like, you know, here's my story. I heard you guys were kind of casting. I don't know if this is what you're looking for, but here's my life story. And I sent it to them. And I think a few hours later, I got an email back and then they called me. I didn't even get to read the email by the time they were already calling me. And they're like, we've been looking for someone to do this on and you're the one. And they just like freaked out and like, when can we come out? So where do you live?
How long ago was that?
This was 2011.
Okay.
And it aired Mother's Day, May 8th, 2011. TLC's show called Strange Sex. So
I think you have that out on your website.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I didn't know about it because I don't
have
bio. Cable TV, but I did go watch it. It was a really interesting episode. I like that it's not at all what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
So the focus was very cool, and I like how they focused on your really dealing with being in a relationship with someone who is also struggling. And so yeah. I take it, did that relationship end?
That ended, yeah. I mean, we were together for about a year after that aired, but, you know, ultimately, she's a gal who she needed to be with someone, I guess, who is a biological male. That's who she is, and that's okay. Yeah. We didn't fit. We're not the puzzle pieces that fit together, and that's okay, you know, and there's someone else out there for me. I always tell her, you know, like, good for you. I hope you get what you need and what you want in life, and I'm supportive. At first, I wasn't. You know, it was very hard for me to deal with that because I really loved her a lot.
Yeah.
But she's moved on, and we've all moved on, and life is good.
Well, you know, I mean, just from one trans guy to another, yeah. I mean, you're freaking hot.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I'm not attracted to men in the least,
oh,
but you are hot.
You're so
sweet. If you're out there listening and you're curious, go look at Brody Ray's pictures on his website because you'll be saying the same thing.
Oh my gosh,
he is a hot man, and he's going to come back. We're gonna have to have Brody back.
I think
we're also going to do a special show called Trans Guys Talking.
Trans Guys Talking.
Yeah. Trans
We're gonna
Guys Talking. Yeah.
I'm going to make a jingle.
Trans.
Just wait. The jingle's coming.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have today. Go pick up Brody's EP online at BrodyRay.com.
Yes.
And help support an artist. He's an amazing guy, amazing human being. And we are so grateful he was here today on Speaking of Happy.